And good Friday morning, Friday, January 25th, 2019, 16 minutes past the hour. It is Over the Back Fence with Pastor Steve Whitaker and myself, Scott Spears. Pastor, how are you? Here we are, another normally frigid January in the Midwest.
It finally got us, didn't it?
It has been pretty rough.
It is really cold. I mean, car doors sticking. And hey, I want to remind everyone as we come on the air this morning to please, please check on the elderly and those that are alone. Please do that and be careful to make sure they're okay.
Absolutely. Now, last week at the end of the program, a letter had come in.
Yes.
A listener who listens to the program had wanted you to address, and I thought, well, we could start with that today.
Uh-oh, don't get me started on that.
I know. It was an interesting letter. It was an interesting letter about some, I guess you'd call them televangelists, who are on preachers on television, who ask for money for certain things, and seed money, sometimes they call it. What's your take on those people?
Well, I don't know about those people. I don't mind a little seed money as long as it's getting a business started. But as far as that kind of seed money, that's a whole other story. You know, my take is quite extensive on that. First of all, I would tell you that if anyone is asking you for seed money or telling you that if you send in money that they will pray for you, or those, if they're not willing to pray for you for no cash, shut them off. One of my pet peeves of any of this is that there's a lot of radio programs out there. And while some of what they're saying, or a lot, or even the majority of what they're saying, may be true when it comes to the Word of God, or maybe some of it is and some of it's not, I will say this, that they have a captive audience. And that captive audience is the elderly, the retired, the disabled, and the poor. Those are people that are typically on during those daytime hours when most of those things are on. Now, I know there's people that work different shifts too, but I'm just saying the bulk of the majority. Now, if you look at that particular group of people, they're also on a fixed income, which means they're not doing real well. So now those people that run those organizations, those ministry organizations, know that they have that captive audience. They know that. They know who their audience is, and they know what buttons to push. You know, if I'm elderly, and I spend a lot of time with elderly people as a pastor, I personally love elderly people. They are the lifeblood of our country. There's a wealth of information in those that are older than us. I think we're doing ourselves a great disservice when we don't tap into that, because when they're gone, all their knowledge and their stories and life goes with them. And but I love elderly people, but the truth of the matter is they do get very lonely. In many cases, if they have children, their children are off somewhere else. Especially if they're not involved in a church or plugged into a church, they can get very, very lonely. And that television, that person on that television, begins to be the one person they can trust, the one they can have hope in. He's telling them that, you know, he's going to pray for them, that he cares about them, and then the next thing is, we really need this money. And if you would just send in a monthly gift of $25 or $10 or $100 or whatever it may be, we will do A, B, or C. Well, they begin to feel like that is family. And that they give to those things. Now, I will say this too, that if those organizations, with that money that came in, were other than paying the person that's doing it a modest salary, like any of us would get, like any pastor would get. You know, pastor's salary should be, in most good ministries, should be the median income of the body in which he serves. In other words, if I am in a church and the median income is $50,000, maybe that's what I should make as a pastor. No, you know, just because that's where you should be, you're relating to the flock. But if everything that they do other than that and paying expenses is going out to real hard mission and sharing of the gospel, which is what they're called to do in the first place as pastors, that's great. But when I see these pictures of these multi-million dollar mansions, and I see you break down a lot of these. There is a Christian watchdog group that watchdogs their own people in those ministries. If they're not willing to submit to that overview and some things of that nature, I struggle with that. And so if you're asking a lady that's bringing in a total of $13,000 a year, in a very limited Social Security, living in a place she can't afford and can't afford her medicine, and you're wanting her to send you $25, $50, $100 a month, and you're living in an extravagant lifestyle, shame on you. And I want to express this to the people that have a tendency to give to those. Find a local church that is going to have a personal touch, that is going to love you, that's going to spend time with you, and give your attentions there. They're not going to bleed you dry, I hope. I do know that there's some larger churches that constantly do ask for money because they have a big monster to feed. And that's where we've lost a lot of it, Scott. And I'll ask you this. I'm going to bring you to this conversation. I'm doing all the talking. And this is supposed to be over the fence, just not one-sided. But when I was growing up, and I'm sure even when you were growing up, Scott, you're a little younger than I am, a lot younger than I am. But anyway, we had more of a local church, a neighborhood church. There were a lot more churches, and they could individually meet the needs of the people within their neighborhood. They knew the people. They knew the community. And I believe that the pastor is supposed to shepherd his flock. And when you look at the size of a flock was typically an amount under 100 sheep. And when you get much above that, you don't know your flock. You can't mentally hold all that there. I believe that when churches get to a certain size where the pastor struggles there, I believe that it's time to split off and have another flock. Find another place that needs a flock and send those people, or have people in a certain area. We were talking about this the other day, and I was talking with a fellow, and I said, you know, when our church would get to a certain point in number, I would look maybe in one of these outlying community areas that needed a church, and see what leaders had come up in the church that would be willing to step out with four or five families and go start a work there so they can serve the needs of those people. And it's changed a lot. You know, we live in a bigger and better society. And just like the corporate farms, everything's big, the corporate stores, the neighborhood stores leaving, the neighborhood farms leaving. Well, the neighborhood church is leaving too. And with that, a lot of people are left out in the cold.
They certainly are. And one of these things, when I read that letter that came in, because I think I'm pretty sure who they were referring to, the televangelists. It's an interesting thing because you can't if somebody else would go on television in any other arena and say something like they say, promising something that cannot be quantified. Because what they're promising can't be quantified in a way. If anybody else would do that, the Attorney General would come and shut them down for fraud. But because the Attorney General does not want to get involved in saying that you should not believe
in faith.
They can't get involved in faith unless faith starts to use things for, you know, we're doing a building fund and you're paying yourself. Then they can get involved in that. But they don't want the story to be that you're asking for money for something that's going to get you into heaven. I don't think
most of these guys offer heaven. I've not heard too much of that. I know they offer prayer and things of that nature to pray for you. That they walk that line most of the time. And I think that they also have... Everything is a donation, is a gift. They ask for a gift. They don't offer to for you to pay for goods and services. And even in and you know, a lot of them will say, send me X amount, and with your gift, I will send you this book or this series of, you know, I don't have a problem with doing that to a point, because a lot of the series of messages are good, and depending on who they are and what it is. But some of them are just plain charlatans that are just squeezing people to death.
Well, if you're selling a book, that's fine. I mean, preachers write books just like anybody else does. That there's nothing wrong with selling that, and if you have a radio or television outlet, okay, that I don't disagree with that. The ones that I have the problem with, you know, it's the, we talked about him off the air last week, but, and I interviewed him three or four times, was Leroy Jenkins. Now, he would say, I'm giving you this holy water that's going to heal you.
Yes.
Now, the Attorney General did look into that. Now, but it was very, it wasn't like, if you are somebody who is bilking elderly people out of money, if you're saying, you know, your grandson's in prison and send me money, we need to get him out, and they do that, or a lot of times they'll use the tax scams this time of year, and they'll say, you owe such amount in taxes, send it in a money order to me. That is very clearly fraud.
Correct.
And I think clearly, I don't know that that water that Leroy Jenkins was giving people was healing them. So the Attorney General didn't approach it as a general fraud case, but they did shut him down from doing it. So it's interesting, because it is an area that is very gray. And if they weren't preachers and they tried to do what they were doing, they would be arrested in most cases.
I think sometimes you have to look at an intent and motive. And we live in an interesting world. A lot of times what pastors get into is you're in front of people. And if you have a style that's very good and you attract people and things begin to grow, it is very hard for pride not to set in. Now, the Bible tells us that pride comes before the fall, and it usually does. And what happens in a lot of cases is guys may start off right, and then they start down this trail, and the popularity builds, and they go from being a minister of the gospel to what I would just call a front man. You know, like you have in any band, the front man that everyone recognizes, everybody knows, and they begin to worship him and not God. And we got to be careful with that. But here's an interesting thing to think about, Scott. And when you talk about that fraudulent area, I think that I firmly believe that we're in a country where the government does need to keep its hands off the church. However, I believe the church has done a very poor job of policing its own and calling out fraud for fear of, I mean, in its infancy stages. No one in the church wants to see a huge scandal in the church, because it tars everyone with the same brush. You know, every time the Catholic Church is caught with another young person, you've got another parent thinking, I don't know if I should send my kids to Sunday school over here. You see what I mean? They worry about that same thing if they don't understand. But here's where I go with a lot of these televangelists and things. First, I want to point out an interesting ministry is the Billy Graham Crusade. The Billy Graham Crusade, they were televised all over the world. They drew a lot of people. The churches typically would, if anyone was funding anything, it was the churches that wanted to be involved in the crusade. You never saw Billy Graham beating anyone up for money, did you? You never saw him promising healing water or anything like that. He strictly told the word of God. And he died a very honored man by everyone. But a lot of these people... Here's my thing, and I'm going to take heat for this. I know some of you are going to call in because you love so-and-so or brother this or brother that, and I understand that. But what I'm telling you is this, that we need to restore the local church in America. We are abandoning our neighborhoods for bigger churches. These people in these poor areas cannot get to those mega organizations that they're calling the church. And if you want to, oh, well, we're reaching out. No, you may be, but here's the problem. if you can tell me in a very large, large church that's always promoting size and growth and size and growth and number, that you are sending a van around to pick up older people in these depleted neighborhoods, that you're picking up the kids, that you're reaching out to each and every home, I'll buy your argument. A lot of people say, well, we have cell groups. And a lot of churches are, and cell we have them in our church. We have different groups that meet during the week. But here's the thing. If you look at the groups out there, most of them have a median age of about 35, okay? It's not the elderly that can't get around. It's not the little, what do you do with all these little kids running the streets? See, that's something the local church had a handle on that the megas don't. And those little kids are as important to Jesus as your kid in the burbs is. You see where I'm at with that? So here's I am with these big churches that are saying, oh, but pastor, they're reaching people on the television, they're reaching those people in their homes. Yeah, there is an extent of that, but they're doing it in a way that they're constantly begging them for money. They're doing all these other things. They're not meeting their personal needs at home. And if they truly are interested in real ministry, get off the air and get in the home.
Well, you know, it's very interesting because here has always been my take on televangelists. I have no problem with a preacher, minister, rabbi being on a broadcast.
Oh, neither do I.
No, because there are people who can't get out. There are people who want to hear what's going on, and they want to hear things of that nature. Now, the difference is that when the church becomes the broadcast outlet, because that changes the motivation. Because if you have a, because this is what I don't understand. Let's say I have an NBC affiliate station. Now, if a church wants to come and buy time on that station, nothing wrong there. That's perfectly fine. I think the network should give them the time to do that.
And they do.
And they do. Now, but the problem is when the church owns the television station, because they have to cover now the operating costs of that station. Mm-hmm. So, when they ask for money, they are asking for, now, yes, their philosophy will be what you just said. Their philosophy will be, well, we have to have money to keep this station going so we can get to those people who can't make it to church. But you are self-serving in a way when the church becomes the television station, because there's a lot more overhead there than there would be. I mean, you have to pay for the tower, you have to pay for the license, you have to pay for the equipment that'll get you on the air. If you're just buying time on a station, you don't have to worry about any of that. Mm-hmm. So that's the difference to me, because it becomes a little more self-serving when you are in ownership and you also are a church.
Well, I think that sometimes that the truth of the matter is that they're doing it initially for the freedom of their own control. But here's part of the problem. And here, there's a good side to this, too. And when I'm talking about broadcasts and whatnot, there's a huge difference between the televangelist that is becoming someone's friend in the home. They see him every day. They're asking for money and seed money and all these kind of things, or promising, you know, I'm going to wipe my brow with this cloth and pray over it and send it back to you. Very suspect and things like that. But at the same time, I can point out that during the day on AM and FM stations, there are several stations that carry some broadcasts of wonderful preachers and teachers that buy time. They're solid. Now, they will say that, have a blip in the end, if you want to support this broadcast, send to blah, 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 blah. Or, hey, for a, if you want to buy this whole series of messages, send in any gift amount under or over $25. And a lot of times, a lot of that, all it is doing is covering station costs. They're not promising They're not promising holy water. They're not promising to pray over anything.
That's right.
They're just saying, if you enjoy this broadcast, there's a guy, Les Feldick. Les Feldick is, I think that all of his stuff's taped now, but he's out of Oklahoma. He's an old rancher, and he did this Bible study every day in a classroom setting with a chalkboard behind him, or a whiteboard or whatever that he would write in. He'd talk, and he'd go through and explain the Bible. I know some people, some elderly people, that literally watch that show every day, and they love his, and it's great understanding of the Bible, and there's several of those out there. You know, you have Chuck Swindoll, and you have, you know, just so many other ones out there that are just great. Michael Youssef's another good one. There's a lot. But anyway, my point is, when they do ask for anything, they're asking for something to cover broadcast costs. They're not sending out their autographed picture that they prayed over. Any of these kind of things. Those are legit. And I would call them legit because, just like in our case, you know, I have a show called The Pastor Spot, which airs here on, well, the live air is on Tuesday at 5:15. But the thing of that is, our church supports that. That's what it does. And that they know what the cost is to be on the station. And the church says, you know what, this is a good way to get the Word of God out and to get things discussed about good values into our community and reflect the values of the church and the community and even share the gospel. And this is a good way to do it, so we do it. I don't make a dime off of it. It's just part of my ministry, of what I do as a pastor. I guess you could say I do because there's an umbrella of all the zillions of odds and ends I do that it make me a pastor. But there's no self-promotion. I don't have pit T-shirts with my face on them. I'm not going to pray over some. I will pray for anyone that calls in because I want to, but it ain't going to cost you a dime. And I think those are a lot of our differences. And I think, too, I'm going to pick on the local church. If the local church was doing a better job in the communities, we wouldn't have as many people relying on those shows, to a point. I don't want to beat up the local church because they're getting beat up enough. Because I'll give you an example. It was a couple years ago. There was a church that had a huge ad on, and they needed a lot of money. Look, when you see massive building, you see massive cash. I know I was in the building business for years. I know what buildings cost. I know what all these salaries cost, what all these people cost. And all of a sudden, all the small communities in the whole area were getting cards in the mail, very nicely done cards, inviting them to that church. Why did they do that when they didn't do it before? Because they needed extra income, and that was the bottom line. They can say, no, it was for outreach. If it was truly for outreach, they would be reaching some of those local churches in the community and saying, how can we help you serve in your community? You see the difference?
Well, and to me, just one more note on the rub for broadcasting. What is always fascinating to me is that I think just from a practical nature, if you operate a station where it's all religious programming or 90% religious, you obviously are going to have that audience. That audience is going to be built in, and yes, they will watch or listen to whatever you're doing. But if you are on a station where the programming is varied, there are people who would not normally listen to a program like that, who are just going to happenstance listen to it because it's on that station that they like. And I never, that's why, and we've talked about it a lot here, and I've talked about it on other shows, I've never told anybody on this station, and we've got quite a few shows on this station now, I've never told anybody what they could or couldn't talk about. I've never went and said, I tell people what the FCC guidelines are, but I never said, you can't talk about this on your show. And I've never told anybody after they were done, don't talk about that again. It's their show. Talk about it. Mm-hmm. And that is how you get an accumulative audience of different people.
Yes.
And that's the point.
Interesting thing, too, I think, is that one thing that a lot of these daytime programming has done And I'll let you that are listening sort out who I'm talking about. I'm not going to point fingers at any particular name or organization or anyone. But we have this thing out there today called the prosperity gospel. And what that basically is that, and that's where a lot of the seed money comes from that they talk about, is that Jesus wants everyone to be prosperous. God wants everyone to be prosperous. And if you do A, B, or C, you're going to reap financial reward. You're going to get prosperous. I can tell you folks right now, that is not biblical at all. And the truth of the matter is, yes, God does promise blessing and favor on his people, but let's look at blessing and favor. Blessing and favor is the areas of your life where you are comfortable, you know you're being used of God, and it's that relationship with the Lord. It's not cash. I mean, granted, God is going to take care of his people. He says so. You know, if he's willing to take care of the sparrow, you know, how much more is he willing to take care of you? That's the truth. But this thing about sending in money and getting money, sending in money and getting money, and I think one of the reasons that that's been tapped in so heavily by this group, this particular group of televangelists, is because they have to justify how wealthy they are. And when people look at them and say, "Why, word, how can you say that? God has blessed them. Look at all they have." And this started probably heavily about 40 years ago. There was a guy on the radio, my brother and I used to joke about it when we were youngsters, about this guy that would show everyone all the gold rings he had on his fingers that God had blessed him with because of his ministry and the gospel and all that he was doing. Folks, that's baloney. That's baloney. Find that in Scripture where Jesus condoned any of that. He never, ever, ever did. A matter of fact, the one that had the most gold in their hand that was doing stuff for money was Judas Iscariot. And we know what he did. And the truth is, God will bless you. He blesses you when you surrender your life to him. And yes, God does ask us to give back some of what we've been given to him. I mean, it's his anyway. He made us who we are to get it. But it's not one of these things where you're gonna you give a sin in $100 that you're gonna get $1,000. And don't let anyone twist your arm to believe that, because it's not gonna happen. And that's where these guys have plugged into that. Because if I'm dirt poor and I don't believe in prosperity ministry, and I see this woman on TV that preaches all the time, and she's got a compound with her whole family living in mansions on this compound, and the ministry plays for every bit of it, I'm going to think, wow, what a charlatan. But if she's telling me that I have all this because of God's favor, because of the wonderful, you know, oh my word, maybe I could have some of that. You see where I'm at? And it's wrong. And I do think sometimes these things need really looked into. But I will say this, and I want to clarify this. A friend of mine, acquaintance, no, she's a friend, but, you know, she's not a churchgoer, and she posted something on Facebook about a year ago about wishing that people would, the government would start taxing churches. And the sad thing is, when you look at these particular groups and these people, it looks like, yeah, the government needs to be taxing these people. But here's the problem. Most of the giving done in this world and in this country is done through church organizations. And that's, we are tax exempt. But here's the thing. People only see those big organizations, and they typically account for such a minute part of the real church. But people get jaded by seeing that stuff. And they think, for instance, our church, if you would see our annual financial statement, it would blow your mind. You would say, how in the world are those people doing that with that money? They're doing it because they're doing what we're called to do and what we're supposed to do in the first place. And God does honor that. See, when God honors you with blessing, Terry, I almost called you Terry.
That's okay.
When God honors you with money, he honors you with the reason to use it for him. For instance, like the Prayer of Jabez was a real popular book a few years ago. And Jabez had asked God to enlarge his territory, and God granted that. But it also says what Jabez did and who he was. See, God will enlarge your territory if in turn you're taking that enlargement and using it to reach the poor, to reach the needy, to share the gospel, to You see the difference? If you're doing it to build a... He's not building you mansions, folks. And, you know, we talk about people say, oh, when I get to heaven, I'm going to get a mansion. Do you know that word mansion, how what it's really interpreted in the Bible?
No.
When he says, I go to prepare a mansion before you, the real words, I go to prepare a house with many rooms. Mm. See, understand that in that day and age, when the Hebrew people were living, they were living in a home with a family in the center and many rooms where as a family they all came together. He's saying, I'm going to prepare a place for you where you can come and live with me in my house with many, many rooms. You know, we get this mansion. Somehow we got it in our mind that if we're faithful to God, we're supposed to be on Easy Street. And I'm going to, if you don't believe what I'm saying to you right now, I want to challenge you out there to answer this question for me. If you are elderly, if you're a shut-in, if you're just a single mom, if you're a single dad, if you're a family, and you've given to these ministries that have promised you prosperity, how many of you have gotten rich? Just answer that to yourself. You don't have to tell me. Answer, have I gotten wealthy? There is your answer.
Well, you know, it's interesting, as I sit here and think about this, because this starts with televangelism, and this talks with a lot of people getting rich out of doing this. Asking for things that maybe aren't necessarily on the level. And it's interesting to me because when I first... boy, I got a frog in my throat today. When I first broke into broadcasting, and this has stuck with me for 17 years now. When I first broke in, because I was not a radio listener. We were talking this morning before the show went on. I'd never taken a journalism class. I was not in plays. I didn't do any of that. So when I got on radio, you know, I really didn't understand the mechanics of it in general. And I worked at a radio station when I first started on air that had been around for 60 years. It had been around. It had been the radio station of the community. And I would put shows on. And when you put shows on, it does take time. It does take effort. And you put them on. And you want people to listen to them. And one day, I was with a journalist who had been there for a long time, for over 50, well, really 60 of the 60 years they'd been on. They'd been there that long. And I was talking, I said, you know, I wonder if anybody's really listening to what I'm doing. And they said, have you told anybody about it? Have you told anybody when it's on? Have you told them why they should listen? And I thought about that, and you know, there is a practicality in that, because if you do something, and you drop it in the middle of the water, and you don't tell anybody you did it, and you don't tell anybody how to find it, how do people know? If you build the greatest birdhouse in the world, and you put it in the garage, and nobody ever sees it, how do they know you built the biggest birdhouse in the world? How do they know you're the greatest birdhouse? They don't. And I've always remembered that, because some people see that as ego, that I shouldn't have to tell somebody to listen to what I'm doing.
That's a struggle with me.
It is. It is.
Because I say, hey, you know, sometimes I'll post, will you listen to the program? Or, hey, are you listening? And I just, you know, I don't want to come across as being egocentric.
Well,
I've seen those people, and they don't do much for my stomach.
No, but I think, like, for example, if the subject of the show is going to be something, whatever it is, I have to assume that everybody in the world does not know that that's going to be the subject at that time of day.
Right.
And there might be people who want to hear that subject, but they just don't know about it. You know.
So tell them.
Yes. And if you look at the biggest conglomerates in the world that have the most listeners and the most people listening, they do promos. They tell you what's coming on the next day. They tell you when to listen. They always tell you the time. Because when you do something, when I went to the prison and did the interviews this past summer, that had nothing to do with me except I was the facilitator doing the interview. It was all about the people who were in prison. And I wanted people to listen to that show. Not for me.
And you told them.
And I said, this is something you've got to hear, because I had already heard it. I was there. I said, you have to hear this choir. You have to hear what these people, who I can't even say their names because that's how rigid it is, have to say. Hear their voices. Hear their inflection. Hear what they have to say. if I hadn't told anybody to listen, maybe they wouldn't have.
You're right. You know, it's interesting. There's nothing wrong with getting the word out there. It costs money. We know that. People, like I talked about a few minutes ago, there will be those that ask, hey, will you help us support this station? But this whole scam stuff is what we're kind of talking about, and that's wrong. Interesting what a friend of mine was doing that he shared with me that it's called the church at Galloway. No, it's not anymore. It's Creekside Church. Years ago, it was Church of Galloway. Anyway, at Creekside. And good little church on the west side, far west side of Columbus, out in Galloway area. And they wanted to get more word out, and they didn't have any money. And they figured out that as far as a broadcast goes, they live stream from the church on Facebook during the broadcast. Well, what they do, this is real simple. He spent $100. He took his cell phone. He bought one of those little zoom lenses you clip on the front. They put it on a tripod. They took a wire from there to their laptop. And a guy sits in the booth. And this thing live streams while he's preaching. And I've watched the live stream. It looks very professional. And people can call in while he's preaching and comment. You know, they message in. You see these little, you know, they message in. He was telling me right before Christmas when I was up there. They do a great outreach, too, and it's a very small church. But he was telling me that when I was up there that a lady had actually called in, and he had stopped in one of his messages because a lady had not called but messaged in, that she had just lost a family member and was having a really tough time at that moment. And he actually stopped in the middle of his broadcast and prayed for this lady specifically and then went back into. Now, that's touching people and spending they got $100 in it, Scott. And it's, you know, see my point? If people want to get the word out about the Word of God, they don't need to fleece people to do it.
Well, that's my point in general. The point I was making about telling people to listen to whatever you're doing or watch whatever you're doing, I do believe if the people who are fleecing people, if they operated on that principle, if they operated, I'm doing a good show, and a lot of people are watching, a lot of people are listening, I don't know that they would have to resort to the tactics that they resort to that make us go and made that listener who wrote that letter think are a little bit of underhanded tactics. Because I think if you're doing a good show and you feel people are listening, that's about all you need. Or people are watching. I think that was a television program the lady was referring to. But I just think that if they did more of that, you wouldn't have to resort to the tactics. I know in this area, on Sunday mornings, right after Meet the Press is on, Joel Osteen comes on Channel 4, NBC, our NBC affiliate. And it's interesting because obviously they buy that time. There's no doubt about it.
A lot of money.
A lot of money. And it's on every week. But during his sermon, he doesn't ask the viewing audience for anything. And I think, not that I'm saying Joel, because Joel Osteen is a mega church, there's no doubt about it.
And there are good, I'm not going to say, there are good, you take a mega church in a large metropolitan area, and they are needed. My concern about the mega church is when they're out in the middle of nowhere and they suck five towns dry to get everybody in there.
Well, the interesting thing is, you mentioned Billy Graham earlier on. Billy Graham did that. One thing about his revivals, yes, they filled up football stadiums, but the reason you saw that they filled up football stadiums is they were also on network television. And network television didn't go to Billy Graham and say, let's put your sermon on television. No. Billy Graham went to them, his ministry, and said, we want everybody to see this. And that's the principle, I think,
that would be a good principle.
Yes.
And the local churches all supported and took groups there. You know, when Billy Graham comes to town, and we've got those letters too, and we've responded, you know, different churches I've been involved in, and they will ask for ushers, they will ask for workers, and you can plug in as a church, and they do that. Here's the thing, and we're running short here, but I'm going to try to get this in real fast.
Got about 5 minutes.
Okay. What we had when I was growing up in most churches was a local church organization. Like, say that you're Methodist, Baptist, whatever you are. There would be and there still are, local organizations where the churches in that area all belong to that particular ministry group. And when we would do things like youth things or get together, we would have a location that everybody would come to. Maybe the next time it'd be another church. If there was a huge church, a meeting place, we could come there and come together and then go back to our churches. And the work of the organization was to literally support all those churches in their own ministry, in their own communities, in their own endeavors. Now what has happened within those organizations, they want to put in these big mega churches. Now what happens is everything they do is at those mega churches, and they're close enough to the other churches that when you invite your people in, they see all this wonder and they're just spellbound by it, and the church are saying, well, come to here, you know, you need to. And then what happens is they start leaving the smaller churches, and now the towns are left dry. The little crossroad communities are left dry. The money's gone. There's no money to support these local churches. And that's what has become what these large churches have almost taken over what used to be an associational gathering of churches. And that's, to me, that's seriously hurt the local church. I've seen it firsthand.
Well, and I'll tell you, it goes back to something you said earlier on, and I'll just say this without mentioning any church names. I believe the number is 168 churches in Marion County, a large number of churches, but probably only three churches that have a huge congregation.
Right.
Now, it's interesting because I know people who have went to the huge churches, mm-hmm. and when they ask for something, and I'm talking about help in their life, in their personal life, that they direct them to community organizations.
Isn't that amazing?
And I always ponder at that and think, you know, I think the reason they came to you is they thought, wow, you're doing well.
You're going to help me.
You're going to help me.
I had a guy come to us that was going to one of those large churches, and he said, you know, they're constantly asking us for money, 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 money. And we wanted, you know, my girlfriend and I were going to get married, and they wanted an unbelievable amount of sum just for them to hold a small wedding at the church. And said, we're looking for another church, would you be? So I counseled the couple. They came to the church, you know, paid their small fee for, there's not even a fee. I mean, it was basically, we're going to give the church a gratuity for being there. And unfortunately, after the wedding was over, they went back to the other church. Really blew my mind. But the point is, I know that one day I was looking at one of the large church websites, and it was talking about the outreach ministries. And they were pointing them, as you said, to these local organizations. If you call our church and need help, if we can't do it ourselves, we're going to bring you somewhere locally. Like, for instance, our ministerial association in Prospect. Now, I was only able to serve Prospect because there's only X amount of dollars. But we help people in the community. When they call in for a gas bill, for electric bill, for something, a real need, we help them. Our church, you know, I think you saw that we took care of close to 90 kids for Christmas last year. We didn't send them to Christmas Angel Tree or anything like that anywhere else. And that's what the local church has always done.
And it's an interesting thing. Now, I do want to remind people that this program is live every Friday morning, 10:10 till 11 a.m. It repeats on Sunday morning from 9:10 to 10 a.m. and then right after the pastor spot on Tuesday night from 6:10 to 7 p.m. And the pastor spot with Pastor Steve Whitaker, Terry Tackett moderates that program, is on live Tuesdays 5:10 to 6 p.m. Replays Sunday morning 8:10 to 9 a.m. and Wednesdays 3:10 to 4 p.m.
Hey, if you'd like to talk to me, I'm Pastor Steve. My number at the church is 494-2222. Leave a message. I promise I'll call you back. Welcome you to our church at 209 East Water Street in Prospect. God bless you all.
Dr. Shepherd had been in prison over a decade. At that point.
No, he was out on bail by then.
Oh, he was out on bail by then. Excuse me.
But you're right. He was in prison for 10 years short, 15.